Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Wednesday, the 21st of March, and you're listening to DW's Africa Link program with me, Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. Glad to have you on board. We are also live on Facebook, DW Africa. Coming up, after over a month in captivity, 101 Dapchi girls are freed by Boko Haram militants. But how was it possible?
It was agreed that there will be no force, there will be no confrontation. So that's why it was possible for them to drop the guns. And don't forget that the lives of these children are much more important to us than, you know, any cheap military victory.
And African leaders signed the African Continental Free Trade Area Agreement, expected to boost trade and integration within the continent.
If we want to industrialize, if we want to diversify, if we want to create the needed jobs for our young population, this is the way forward.
Those are some of the stories that we've lined up for you, but there has been more happening in the world, and that's what we bring you now.
I'm Christina Kripal with the DW News. Africa's leaders gathered in Rwanda's capital of Kigali today to launch the African Continental Free Trade Area, CFTA. 44 out of 55 member states signed the agreement establishing a free trade area seen by the African Union as the biggest in the world. Currently, African countries only do about 16% of their business with each other. In Kigali, Rwanda's Foreign Affairs Minister Louise Mushikiwabo explained what the agreement means to Africa.
It has critical economic implications for African populations. It will open up a market of 1.2 billion people with the possibility of generating enormous wealth on the continent through accelerated investment, economic diversification, and increased trade.
Boko Haram extremists today returned almost all of the 110 girls abducted from their Nigeria boarding school a month ago. Residents said the fighters brought the girls into Dapchi in 9 vehicles and told the population the abduction had been a warning for them not to send their daughters to school anymore. Nigeria's information ministry said 91 of the 110 schoolgirls had been confirmed freed. The fate of the others was not immediately clear. The former anti-corruption chief in the Democratic Republic of Congo, Abbas Kayonga, has been jailed for life by a military court on charges of rebellion and murder. A former rebel, Kayonga was arrested last November by United Nations peacekeepers in the eastern city of Bukavu. Kayonga headed a body probing fraud and corruption in South Kivu. He was dismissed by the province's governor days before his arrest. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. German Chancellor Angela Merkel today acknowledged that the migrant influx of 2015 led to deep divisions in the country. Merkel, who was sworn in for a fourth term last week, said Germany should be proud of allowing in more than 1 million refugees in 2015 and 16. But she added that this had been an exceptional humanitarian situation which must not be repeated. Merkel also contradicted her own new interior minister and coalition partner, Horst Seehofer, who recently said that Islam was not a part of Germany. Merkel stated,
"There is absolutely no question that historically our country is Judeo-Christian. But however important and right this is, it's also right to say that the 4.5 million Muslims living in Germany mean that their religion, Islam, has now become a part of Germany."
At least 38 people were killed today by an insurgent mortar assault on a market in Damascus, according to state media. It was the deadliest attack in the capital since the start of the 7-year civil war in Syria. The government blamed the attack on rebels in the eastern Ghouta suburbs, where Syrian troops backed by Russia have been waging a major offensive over the past month. An Islamic State suicide bombing attack in Afghanistan's capital of Kabul killed at least 29 people. 52 others were injured in the bombing today, which took place near a shrine where people were gathering for celebrations of Nowruz, the Central Asian New Year festival. Islamists consider it a pagan celebration. For more news and information, download the DW app from the Google Play Store or from iTunes. I'm Christina Kripal.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link program. I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. We are also live on Facebook. Just go to our page at DW Africa and drop your comments on the stories that we are covering. Now, we start off in Nigeria, where the government says Boko Haram militants have returned 101 of the 110 girls who they had abducted from their school in Dapchi a month ago. The girls said some of their friends died in captivity. Their release comes a day after an Amnesty International report accused the Nigerian army of failing to heed warnings of the attack. Abubakar Jallo with more.
There were jubilant scenes in Dapchi town as family members and friends reunited with the freed girls. The fighters drove into Dapchi in 9 vehicles and left the girls in the center of the town. The captors gave no reason for their release, but Nigerian Information Minister Lai Mohammed denied that a ransom had been paid. He said that the government chose negotiations rather than military force to secure the return of the girls.
Once violence and confrontation was ruled out and the negotiation started, there was a deliberate pause on the part of the military. In other words, it was agreed that there would be no force, there would be no confrontation. So that's why it was possible for them to drop the girls. And don't forget that the lives of these children are much more important to us than, you know, any cheap military victory.
The Dapchi kidnapping on the 19th of last month brought back painful memories of a similar abduction in Chibok in April 2014, when more than 200 girls were taken away. Khadija Grema, who was among those kidnapped in Dapchi, told reporters they were not mistreated during their time in captivity, but she is mourning the loss of some of their friends.
There were 5 of us that died. Those that died were not killed by Boko Haram. They died because they were trampled upon. It was stress and trauma that made them tired and weak.
The latest mass abduction is thought to have been carried out by a Boko Haram splinter group which is aligned with the Islamic State group. Alhaderi Kadua is one of the girl's parents.
I feel very much happy. I thank God. And I am praying still again to not such a thing will happen to us and anywhere else. Right? I am just very much happy about the prayers given to us by all of the wishes in and outside Nigeria. We thank God for that effort.
Boko Haram has used kidnapping as a weapon of war during its nearly 9-year insurgency that has claimed at least 20,000 lives and made more than 2 million others homeless.
DW's Abubakar Jallo. Jane, good news from Nigeria. What are people saying on our Facebook page?
Well, there are quite a number of divergent views there that people are expressing. But just one quick one from Prince Young. He says, the most important thing is that the girls are back. Keep those comments coming and we shall come back to them a little later. But first, did the company Cambridge Analytica unlawfully use Facebook data to support US President Donald Trump's election campaign? The question came up over the weekend when a former employee of the consulting company spoke out about Cambridge Analytica's dubious methods. Yet it's also unclear which role Facebook did play in the action. CEO Mark Zuckerberg is under pressure to give an explanation. DW's Patrick Grosse has been digging deeper into the latest development and now reports.
Christopher Wiley does not see himself in a row with whistleblowers as Edward Snowden, saying his decision to come forward was more about contrition when he revealed one of the biggest abuses of online data in history. The former employee of Cambridge Analytica confirmed that the data mining firm harvested information from 50 million Facebook profiles to build models and influence people.
All I can say is from my experience at the company, and knowing what we were looking at, I genuinely think that what we were setting out to do would be genuinely impactful in elections.
Facebook now denies responsibility for the data misuse, saying it is a victim of a deception by Cambridge Analytica. Cambridge Analytica has already fired its CEO over the allegations, but Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg is still under pressure. Several political institutions around the world announced to start investigations. UK Information Commissioner Elizabeth Denham questions the role of both companies.
We really need to do a data audit to find out whether this personal information was acquired by Cambridge Analytica, whether or not Facebook took appropriate measures when they found that there may have been a breach.
Same did the US Senate and the European Union by announcing to consider all legal ways to examine Facebook's role and the influence on the US elections.
That was our reporter Patrick Gross. History in the making. That is what just happened in the Rwandan capital, Kigali. After 6 years of negotiations, African leaders have finally signed the landmark agreement bringing together 54 nations under one common market. The African Continental Free Trade Area Agreement is expected to be ratified by all member states of the African Union and will create a market of 1.2 billion people. DW's Nasra Bishumba attended the conference and sent us this report, now presented by Eunice Wanjiru.
More than half of the continent's heads of states and representatives signed the agreement. The free trade area aims to deepen the integration process. The draft agreement commits countries to removing tariffs on 90% of goods and aims at tackling non-tariff barriers, which hamper trade between African countries, such as long delays at the border. Rwanda's Foreign Affairs Minister Louis Mushikiwabo explains what this agreement means to Africa.
This agreement is not just a simple document. It has critical economic implications for African populations. It will open up a market of 1.2 billion people with the possibility of generating enormous wealth on the continent through accelerated investment, economic diversification, and increased trade.
The Executive Secretary of the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, Vera Songwe, also weighs in on why the agreement will fix some of Africa's biggest challenges.
One of the biggest challenges we face in Africa is in leveraging the tremendous resources of our large and growing young population. Intra-Africa trade is different. It is far more labor-intensive. If we want to industrialize, if we want to diversify, if we want to create the needed jobs for our young population, this is the way forward.
Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa, whose presence caused excitement and cheers from most participants at the summit, called for political commitment and asked members to ratify the agreement within the 180-day deadline.
Firstly, as a region, SADC, and together with the rest of Africa, we should increase the pace. I believe that political commitment is there, but the pace at which each individual member state may move may be the issue. But as far as my country is concerned, things are now different. Zimbabwe is open for business.
43 countries signed the agreement. Nigeria and Uganda earlier pulled out, fearing the agreement could harm their countries' economies. However, at the ceremony, Uganda's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Sam Kutesa, appended his signature to all the three agreements, to the surprise of many. The agreement comes to effect after the signatory countries have ratified it within their respective countries.
A report by Nasra Bishumba.
And Jane, going back to our top story, there's some good news coming from Nigeria. And as you heard, the Boko Haram militants have returned 101 out of 110 girls who they had abducted from their school in Dapchi a month ago.
Yes, like I indicated earlier on, people have been talking about what is happening there. People, some of them are happy, some of them are putting blame on the government. And Tong Chang says Nigerian government should stop wasting time fighting Boko Haram. They would rather focus on stopping to steal public money.
And we have this one, Teresa Freetown in Sierra Leone. He says, if the family has money, let them send their children to another country for better education. Of which, Jane, I think it's not possible because it's quite expensive.
And like I said, some people are questioning. Chidi Obeikwe says it's unlikely that the Boko Haram terrorist group did that, even if they go for suicide missions just to achieve their ideology. Quite a comment that is rather contradicting there.
And last one from 3D Nad says, I find it quite funny. How much ransom was paid in this operation?
And like we had it in the report, the minister said there was no ransom paid. Keep those comments coming.
Welcome back to the program. My name is Jane Nyinge.
And I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet. Remember, Africa Link is live on Facebook, so do check us out.
Still to come, the Ghanaian government starts a campaign to reduce its rising population. But what are the people saying?
Comparing our population to our mineral resources, it doesn't really tally. That means the population are more than what we really have in the country.
Actually, I don't believe in restricting humans as to what they should do.
We have lost the value of our currency, and there is nothing that we can do to regain it soon. Those were the words of the Thousand Sudan President Salva Kiir as he handed over the finance ministry to a new minister. Since the war broke out in 2013, life has never been the same again for the people there. The economy is in total collapse. Aid workers can barely access desperate people trapped in war zones, and the cost of living has skyrocketed. President Salva Kiir sacked his finance minister, saying change in leadership would perfect things. But was this the right move? Wake Simon Wudu has been finding out.
Ever since President Salva Kiir sacked his longtime finance minister, Stephen Diu Dau, many people have been questioning the move. Economists like Kimo Adiebo, a professor of economics at the University of Juba, have faulted the president for failing to address real issues affecting the country other than a mere change of leadership.
If you want to control the economy, you have to address the spillovers of the war, right? The insecurity resulting into lack of confidence on the part of the private sector, even development partners.
In the corridors of power, it is said that Diu has been strict on allowing individuals to cast checks at the Ministry of Finance and had stopped issuing monies to government officials to travel abroad. But that is not all. The government of South Sudan spends 50% of its budget on security, something that analysts say is wrong. Agustino Ting Mayai, a policy analyst with the South Sudan's Soot Institute, a private research firm, says that besides peace, Garang will have to deal with the realistic issues affecting the output of the ministry.
The revenue that the country needs to operate to meet its functions, it's not there. You have civil servants not being paid for months, and that is problematic. You have corruption that plagues the economy, and the Ministry of Petroleum is littered with that. If you look at remittances from oil revenue, you'll find some issues there.
South Sudan depends majorly on oil revenues, which funds its annual budget with the estimated 98%. However, continuing conflict has destroyed half of the oil fields, reducing revenues miserably. Since the breakout of conflict in 2013, the cost of living has become so high that majority of the population cannot afford. The South Sudanese pound continues to shrink against the dollar. In 2013, the exchange rate was 5 South Sudanese pounds for one US dollar. Today, it goes for 240. Prices of essential commodities have more than tripled. An example is a 50-kilogram sack of flour, a basic necessity of many families. It used to cost 120 South Sudanese pounds before the outbreak of the conflict. Now it goes for 7,000 South Sudanese pounds, doubling a monthly salary of a senior civil servant at the national government serving as a director general.
Wake Simon Wudu, bringing us up to date with the economic collapse in Africa's youngest country of South Sudan.
On the spot.
Now, Ghana's population experts are warning of dire consequences for the country's growth if families are not made to reduce their numbers. That means couples would have to give birth to just a few children, a number they can effectively cater for as the population reaches 29 million with a birth rate of 2.5% every year. Isaac Kalechi in Accra has more on this story.
It is the poorest in the Ghanaian community that continues to have more children. The rising figure worries the government due to lack of resources to cater for them. This has forced the country's National Population Council to launch a nationwide campaign focusing on family planning.
You see, for population, you have to bring it down to the family level. You have to look at it at the family level because population
That's Letitia Adlid Appiah, who heads Ghana's Population Council. She says the increasing population figure should scare Ghana, as it is becoming difficult to enhance the living standards of citizens. According to her, birth control is the only solution.
I have three girls. I don't think that on my salary, if I had six girls, they would have been where they are, and I would also have been where I am. No. Quality will surely be compromised. Everybody will be stressed out. You have to plan for the number of children you can comfortably take care of.
Ghana attained middle income status in 2010 and has made oil discoveries since. The country's economic growth rate of 7% annually since 2005 hasn't significantly addressed poverty. The Statistical Service says in its recent Living Standard report that poverty still remains prevalent due to inequalities. This is one of Ghana's impoverished communities called Choko. It's densely populated, with birth rates extremely high, as couples as young as 18 have more than three children. Residents in this area shared their thoughts on the ongoing campaign to control birth rates.
Comparing our population to our mineral resources, it doesn't really tally. That means the population are more than what we really have in the country.
I would not really go for laws. Actually, I don't believe in restricting humans as to what they should do.
I don't even think we should control it. Human capital is more than riches.
But a member of Ghana's Committee on Employment and Social Welfare in Parliament doesn't think the population is the major issue. Richard Koshiga says the country must focus on judiciously using its vast resources to create opportunities for its populace.
If we were to have in place the necessary industrialization, development, technological advancement and all, where jobs are effectively created and there's no stagnation in job creation, we will not be talking about population explosion. It is because we have experienced continually stagnation in job creation, no new jobs are being added, the existing ones are folding up.
Irrespective of the debates that have ensued, the campaign for reduced family size continue, but without a law to coerce people. That means achieving set targets would be daunting, as many Ghanaians are still conservative about birth control issues.
Isaac Kalechi there in Accra, Ghana. Jane, there are some people who believe having many children is like an insurance cover. Rather than taking an insurance, you better have many because they'll help you in future. I think that is the problem.
Well, this is a topic that has attracted some controversy on our social media platforms. Certainly, like you just said, some do believe that there's more reason to have more children, and there are those who think, well, we don't really need them. And there are those who are blaming the politicians. I start with Yakub from the United Arab Emirates. He says most parents have more than four children in Africa, but have very little education and are poor. I think they launched a very good initiative.
An interesting one there. And Ibrahim Jallo from Gambia says it should be an increase of population that doesn't affect national economy, especially if the population is hardworking population. So he doesn't have a problem.
And let me tell you what, people really engage on discussion. And I like the way they do it, because immediately after Ibrahim wrote that comment, Prince Akma disagreed with him. And he says that's a big no, because in sub-Saharan Africa, 97% of the countries have very poor economies.
And Ali Cham from Gambia says the number of children couples should have should not be dictated by anyone.
David from Southeast Nigeria says the problem of Africa is not the population, but rather the bad rulers.
And we have another one here from David. And he says population is no problem here. If it should have been a problem, Asia would have collapsed.
Interesting. Keep the conversation going. We shall certainly come back to your comments.
Living Planet Africa.
Now, for those of you who are well-versed with West Africa, you may know that many people there love bushmeat. This has put most animals like apes in danger of being poached. Amid this growing scare, Ape Action Africa in Cameroon serves as the animal savior. It is one of the largest conservation projects of its kind in Africa, tending to more than 300 animals. It rescues injured apes, eventually reintroducing them into safe environments. From Menyamin in Cameroon, Eyong Blaise and Yulia Melke sent us this report.
This chimpanzee is about to undergo surgery. First, the vet makes sure the anesthetic has taken effect. Then he and his team prepare to transport the animal to a small ward at the Meifu Sanctuary. It's a delicate operation. Ever since he was a child, vet Babala Tafon has been surrounded by animals.
I grew up, first of all, in a home that is very animal-loving. And I was one of those that were chosen, fortunately, to be in charge of the small herd that we had. We had some sheep, we have dogs. So that bond developed at that very early stage in my life.
The 41-year-old is giving the animal a temporary contraceptive implant. It's a routine operation for the primates in the sanctuary. Once they're released back into the wild, they'll be able to procreate again. The majority of animals brought here are orphans. The Meifu Sanctuary is located in the rainforest, not far from the capital, Yaoundé. The conditions here are similar to those in the wild. The centre was founded by the British NGO Action Apes Africa, which works with the Cameroonian government. Officials seize animals that are being held illegally as pets or at risk of ending up as bushmeat. Another risk for the primates is deforestation, which is causing their habitat to shrink. The uncontrolled trade in bushmeat is a huge problem for the government. In many places in Cameroon, bushmeat is openly sold on the street. Its popularity makes the conservationists' work more difficult. The sanctuary has a constant influx of orphans. But Babala Tafon is up for the challenge.
I'm very honored to be in charge of the health of these animals because I think all turns around their health, you know. When we get into this project, when we started, we had maximum, I think, 30 headcount animals in a very, very bad state living at the Mvogbetsi Zoo. And most of those animals that came in died because there was no real health follow-up of those animals that were arriving.
Babala Tafon first came here as an intern. That was 17 years ago. He's been working here since. Like him, director Rachel Horgan is passionate about the well-being of the primates. The park is also open to tourists who pay entrance fees. But caring for the animals can be costly. The upkeep of one primate costs about €600 a year.
There's a huge amount of challenges from everything from finances, because we have over 350 primates now, and that's a constant strain financially on the project. But I think the biggest challenge regarding the whole picture is being able to stop the influx of orphans coming in.
So far, they haven't been able to release any of the orphans back into the wild. Conditions are not yet considered safe enough.
Eyong Blaise and Yulia Melke sent us this report from Cameroon.
And going back to our top story on the release of 101 Dapchi girls by Boko Haram, looking at our Facebook page, Wawa Etienne says Nigerians usually claim their country is the heartbeat of Africa, yet they have the worst police force in the world.
Well, that's his comment. I have no opinion on that one. It is something that probably the Nigerian people can personally analyze.
And Jude Mwanze cannot believe the government. He says Muhammadu Buhari paid the Boko Haram militants for the release of Dapchi schoolgirls.
Those are the kind of comments that people have been talking about, but that's not all we've been covering. Let's have a quick look at what people have been saying about the Cambridge story that has been developing since yesterday.
Yes, indeed. And we have Aquamandi, and he says, does this improper use of user information come as a surprise?
Interesting. Does it come as a surprise? Maybe not, maybe yes, but people have been engaged in debate, and somebody here named Fred White says this is infringement of people's privacy, so probably it's not the right thing to do. Well, that's all we had time for. Thank you for listening. My name is Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. Continue with that conversation on our Facebook page, DW Africa.